So we've talked cyber, we've talked production, we've talked budgeting, we've talked workflow, and with this panel, we're actually going to talk about when you actually have content that's going out into the ecosystem. And we know there's a variety of devices. You've got Roku devices, you've got Apple TVs, you've got Sling, you've got Sony View. There's so many different options with how consumers view content, and it can be very confusing. They're all different. They often look legitimate when they're not. And we're going to talk about some threats to live broadcasting, over the top, some of these devices, copy protection that's been compromised. So to start out, I'll just let you guys get in line, introduce yourself, and then I'll start us off.
Okay. Cyril Riquelton-Abdi from Nick Turner, one of the other French guys. I look after content protection and anti-piracy for Nick Turner.
Kevin Taylor with Comcast, and I'm involved in piracy, theft of service, and other issues related with fraud.
I'm Mark Nakano. I'm the Senior Director of Product Marketing and Partnerships at NextGuard. We're a forensic watermarking company. I've been actually in the media and entertainment space for about 20 years, with the last 10 years focusing mainly on security.
Hi, I'm Steve Hollyhead, currently Director of Technical Operations at Fox Sports. And prior to that, I've been a workflow consultant, worked for Discovery, worked for the BBC, as well as working for some technology manufacturers such as Autodesk and Avid. So very glad to be here.
All right. Well, Kevin, I'll start with you, because we actually had some very interesting conversations about these pirate boxes that are available, and maybe you can sort of talk about them, where people might buy them, why they might look like they're legitimate, what types of offerings are on there, and if you can sort of talk about that landscape.
Yeah, would love to. And matter of fact, maybe I'll start with a story. So one of our senior execs was in New Orleans about a year ago, and at a conference, and he went to the local mall. Walking through the mall, he sees this kiosk. On the kiosk, it says, "The future of TV is here." And so, working for Comcast, he was kind of curious what the future of TV was, So he walked over there, and in their signage, they talked about in-theater content and all the TV series and Netflix original content that you could get if you bought this box. And so he picked up some literature, and we acquired the box from that company. And here's what we found. So this particular company that was in the mall has been buying Android set-tops, and they can get them from, pick your favorite distributor. And they buy them for about $40, $45, okay? And then they load some software on, and they load Kodi on, which really isn't an infringing software, but it's the plugins that go into Kodi that kind of plug this thing into the pirate ecosystem. And then they turn around and sell it for about $300 to $350. So it's a pretty good, deal for the people providing, the devices. And the other thing that's really kind of interesting about this is you think about sort of the insidiousness of this problem is, does sort of Joe Average that was walking through the mall who just dropped $350 on this box, does he think he's a pirate? And he absolutely doesn't, And so this is, kind of what, the new part of the piracy ecosystem that we see is companies like this particular one that are, sort of taking the pirate ecosystem and putting it on devices and then selling those, kind of through normal distribution mechanisms, in the mall, at fairs. And one of my favorite things about this company is when we looked at them, you too can become an affiliate. You can go sign up and you'll get the boxes cheaper, and you can set up your own kiosk in the mall, and they have all the signage and everything ready for you. So I think this is something that's been kind of growing in the last couple of years, but has only recently kind of come more on kind of on our radar as far as a shift in that pirate ecosystem.
Yeah, and I believe that they also have, tech support, so they look legitimate. It's like if you have a problem, you call.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, on one of the pirate boxes that we had, and I should mention, there's sort of two models that we see. There's sort of the hardware sales model, which is the one I described, but there's others that we see that are doing what we call subscription services. So you pay a monthly fee to them, you know, but along with that, you know, you get customer service. And so one day we walked in, you know, to where we had these set up, and there was a nice little, message on the set top that said, "We had a server failure, and we're in the process of recovering from that. We'll be back up on air, you know, before too long, you know." And, for this same company, we had some problems getting it set up. So we called their customer service, and they were very helpful. Unfortunately, maybe even better than some of what we do, Don't tell anybody I said that. But, but that's sort of the ecosystem that we see evolving out there.
Yeah, and Cyril Turner, you guys have a lot of original programming. You have sports, you have news, which I guess is also something that's often rebroadcast without your permission. What are your biggest areas of concern with your programming, and what's the window where it's really painful?
So the pain is truly during the first 48 to 72 hours after I broadcast. We truly see a peak of the NAC piracy between the first 72 hours, where it tends to be at half point after the XC3 kind of like window, another half by XC7. What we have seen is a pain point with pre-air releases that are often, during the 48 hours pre-air, and that's what hurts us the most. Very, very hard to put a dollar figure on these, but it is still a big pain.
And are you seeing threats from social media, from the Facebook Lives and YouTubes, and how do you combat these common social media platforms?
The best we can, with lots of eyes. So, yes, we see a lot of traffic through social media. Facebook is emerging truly as a new avenue for rebroadcasting or for piracy. They are providing some tools now, but I still have to play with these. On the YouTube front and other avenues, one of the issues we have, or that we're facing a lot, is not just people uploading content, but it's people being clever enough to ingest content and have that tiny pictures of just themselves at the bottom right through the whole video, where through 11 minutes of a kids show, they might just make a "oh great," and that "oh great" makes it a reaction work, which means that we cannot issue any takedown notice unless we review every single video that is there on a daily basis, and we don't have enough eyes nor time to just do that.
Well, that's very interesting. And Steve, you work in a very fast-paced world of sports broadcasting where probably the value is the immediacy of it. It's like no one wants to watch yesterday's game. So what types of content protection activities are you involved in? And what are some of the challenges, and what are some technologies that you might be utilizing?
Yeah, thanks. So, it's actually a very good point. In the world of news, and in my case, sports, the content's quite ephemeral, right? It's going to be valuable for a fairly short window of time. So what are some of the things that we need to do to help with that? Well, obviously, if we have a new pilot shooting in the studio, we don't want any of that to get out, and we certainly don't want someone roaming around with their Facebook Live broadcasting that, because that really is going to shoot us in the foot. But apart from cases like that, we really are more concerned about interrupting our ability to actually get our content out. So sort of denial of service attacks, whether those come from external agents or bad actors inside our facility. Some of the things that we've done to combat that is obviously lock down most of our devices with dual factor authentication. And in the case of systems which are basically running all the time. When someone logs off their shift, we can actually log someone else on and actually continue to do the same work with that server or that workstation using a service account instead. So we're taking steps both in terms of our internal and external traffic and also our internal and external users, freelance and staff. So, you know, those kinds of threats are obviously very common to all of our businesses, but are less about content protection. So what about content protection? Well, what do we define as content? So there's an interesting question, because obviously our audio video assets are content, but so is our software and our software licenses. So are our event schedules, and so are our security plans for the World Cup in Russia, or what have you. So how do we face that internally? Well, one of the big challenges that I've been looking at recently was to, as the previous panel was discussing, to reduce some friction. So rather than forcing our staff and freelancers to use the du jour solution from Microsoft or whatever our IT department has chosen, what we've been trying to do instead is swim with the salmon. And all our salmon like Google. And because they like Google, they are using Google for work as well as for their home content. So guess what? Content, our information about events, our information about security, our SOPs, things like that, are slowly drifting away from the corporation and getting stored in all these tiny little Gmail accounts all over the place. So what we've done is actually engaged directly with Google to make sure that we put in a system whereby they can continue to do that, but via a locked down account that is authenticated against our Active Directory structure. So there's an example of protecting essentially non-video, non-audio content, but content that's nonetheless very important to our operation, and we really don't want it to get out there. In terms of software, for example, one of the things that we have done recently is engage with a company called AV3. And what they provide is a service that allows us to constantly scan, you know, once a day, all of our production machines and see if any software has been installed when it shouldn't have been, and also check to make sure that if stuff was installed, that we indeed have a license for it. So I understand that some of these concerns are probably not the concerns of a post-production chain or a film chain or a TV chain, but I'd encourage you to think about them, because they are content, and it is content that could potentially speak to your delivery process, the actual thing that you're working on, who the talent is, who's involved, and indeed how we protect those people at event environments and things like that.
Great. And Mark, you've previously have been involved in conditional access, watermarking, enforcement. One of the things that's supposed to protect our content was HTTP 2.2, and there was a significant hack. What's been done to plug this hole?
So I was actually one of the early engineers at DirecTV, and we used to always say, what one group of engineers can make, another group can unmake. So security is never, you know, going to be bulletproof, right? So there's always something that has to be done. So, you know, going around, everybody, when HDMI first came out, everybody thought, all right, great, and then it got hacked, and then now everybody was looking forward to HDMI 2.0, which HTTP 2.2, which was supposed to secure everything again, right? And then right away that thing gets hacked. So what happens is, you know, you basically find your ways around conditional access and DRM. So one, you know, method is obviously what we do is watermarking. So what watermarking does is it basically gives accountability to whoever is leaking this content, right? So now it doesn't really prevent you from leaking the content, but what it does is it allows you to trace it back to who's doing it, and then you can, you know, either do legal measures or something to actually take a lot of this stuff down. Now, I'm actually the security guy kind of on this panel, and what's interesting to hear about all this piracy is we can actually address every single one of your piracy needs. So, you know, with your boxes, with your Kodi boxes and stuff, the draw there is really there's a lot of those type of boxes can actually offer services that nobody else can bundle, right? I can get like Netflix, I can get Amazon, you know, I can get everything all in one box,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and actually, if I can add to that, it's actually a great observation, because I would say, you know, years ago, you know, Comcast or Direct or, you know, used to be sort of the aggregator of aggregators, but today, honestly, it's the pirates. Yeah. You know, they have content that we can't legally get. They bundle it together. And the other thing I would add is, not only is it VOD content, but it's also linear broadcast content that's all part of this package that they're putting together. You know, so.
Yeah, so through our parent company, we actually have methods of shutting that stuff down, right? Where we can monitor, where we can find that stuff, we can shut it down, we can find these different services. You know, like you were saying with the subscription model, it's even easier because you can actually find the authorization server and shut that down. Then you take the whole network down, right? Yeah. And then with Cyril, you know, you're basically having issues with fair use, right? Because basically, if somebody pirates something, but then you modify it slightly to say, oh, great, then that's considered fair use, right?
It is.
Yeah. So we're actually working on some solutions for that, right? Unfortunately, we don't really have something for, like, the rest of the stuff because we're basically focused on media assets, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
But it's really interesting to hear that all of this piracy stuff and that, you know, we do have something to address all of it. But your point is actually there's other stuff that you should really worry about, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, and even looking into the future, you know, obviously a lot of broadcasters now are looking at flipping their facilities to entirely IP-based models. Well, you know, right now we have an air gap between IP and linear TV, which is that it gets turned into an HDSDI signal at some point, and good luck trying to hack that. But at some point very, very soon, we're going to start to see full IP infrastructure throughout the facility, all the routing. Now you could start to see attacks that actually siphon out content that's even on the way into the building, never mind on the way out of the building. So yes, absolutely. I think there are further challenges yet to come.
Yeah. And maybe just to add to that, because, you know, as we've kind of looked in the space, I mean, you know, it's amazing the number of live streams that are out there. I mean, it's sort of 100,000 plus. And as you look at that and you start with the, okay, so I go and look at one of those, how do I know where it originated? And I have to admit, I think watermarking's a good thing. But it's one of these things where it's like an industry problem because, you know, if one provider's watermarked and another's not, I mean, there are so many valid distribution means for this content, and then those get picked up. You know, there's millions of endpoints out there. How do you know which one of those endpoints is actually the one leaking the content that's being fed back into the over-the-top pirate systems that's now feeding their revenue models and their business models? Because, on that side, it is mostly about the money that they can make from redistributing the content that this group has put together.
Is there anything you can do about these devices that are being sold? They're on Amazon, they're on eBay, they're in malls. It's like, have you guys looked into, because it impacts everyone who has content is losing money here.
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question. So just a couple of points about that. So one of the things, and you know, I think we're just sort of starting the conversation here, is I feel like we as the industry need to be doing something about this, and it needs to be coordinated. And what I mean by that is one of the service subscription devices that we've looked at, 1,000 channels of sports. I mean, you know, from the U.S., from the U.K., from France, from, you know, Russia, you know, the amount of content that they've aggregated is sort of amazing. And then when I look at that and I go, okay, so let's say, and I'll pick on NBC. Let's say the NBC goes over and does enforcement. So you take off a handful of channel out of 1,000 channels. The impact to the people providing that service is really pretty small. And so I think we as an industry, you know, need to look at how do we sort of coordinate our efforts, you know, so that when we go after these folks, you know, we're doing it in such a way that actually materially impacts their business, because they're in it for the business side. So I think that's kind of thing number one. Thing number two, there's the issue of who actually has the right to actually do copyright enforcement against these. And so Comcast, the distributor, you know, yeah, I really don't have that right.
You have no right, yes.
Yeah, so I really need to rely on the studios and the broadcasters and those folks that have those rights.
We have the same issue when we broadcast some live sports. It's our broadcast, but it's not our sports federation.
Right.
So that is also, you know, another issue.
Yeah. And I think I think that's just sort of another point of we need to look at this from an ecosystem, you know, perspective on the pirate side and what they're doing, but also, you know, how do we gather together and create sort of the right mechanisms, you know, to look at this holistically and address it holistically.
Yeah, so I think, Brian, the problem with these boxes, of trying to go after these boxes, is everything about the box is legitimate, right? You know, when you sell it, everything's legitimate. What makes it illegal is when you download the add-on. Or when you do something, right?
So they're very easy. You go on YouTube, and there's like a 5-minute tutorial that tells you step by step how to take your Apple TV, or not Apple TV, but the Amazon Fire Sticks, and it's very simple steps and very easy
exactly.
to follow.
Exactly. So, like, what, to Kevin's point, I mean, we have to come up with a different way of combating that, because, you know, I can go buy a Fire TV or I can go buy a Chromecast. There's nothing wrong with it. But then once I put that app on, then it's illegal, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of the services that you know, Kevin, you were talking about, is like they're already preloaded. It's like you don't have to do anything for, you know, you can go on, you know, Craigslist for $40 and buy a Fire Stick that already has the software on it.
Yeah, and actually, to pull on that thread, because I think this is, you know, the big shift that we're noticing is that, you know, in sort of previous generations of piracy, you need to be sort of technically reasonably good. You know, you download BitTorrent, configure your system to get the content you want, do all those kinds of things. So people in this room can pretty much easily do that, but mom definitely can't do it, and grandma, you know, no chance that grandma can do it. But mom or grandma can walk through the mall and buy one of these things, and so what we see is sort of a commercialization of the piracy that we did not see before, and it really gets enabled by these low-cost devices, whether it's the Android set-top or whether it's a PC, you know, on a stick or a Fire TV stick or whatever it is, it's sort of the, you know, from the pirate side, they can buy something cheaply, add stuff onto it, and then sell it, and they make their money, and that's what they're interested in.
Great. Cyril, real quickly, you guys are a big target for hacktivism, nation state. You have news. Or what is your... your thoughts on protecting, like being able to stay on the air, and maybe Steve, you as well as Fox, you guys do big events, Super Bowls, World Series. What do you guys feel? That's a big threat.
We are still on the air. CNN seems to be a kind of flawed like target, and this is a big like concern. Our like big luck is that our like own team has been brought under our CISO, so we like truly have now a kind of infosec like approach to the like content and to like cyber. Yes, we are very like conscious of this. We are like mentoring. We are like tracking. Needless to say that during the elections, we were like a bit stressed. Okay, but we were tracking, and we are still alive. I cannot say much more.
And Steve, same similar for you?
Yeah, I mean, at one point it was pretty easy to blueprint events. You know, we could say, okay, we're going to need this, 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 and this. It was the same as the Super Bowl last year, only we've got 6 more cameras or whatever it might be. Now what we find is that every tentpole event that we do has a lot more due diligence security-wise around it. You know, to the point where we used to pretty much home run our material back to the facility and then use all of the goodness in the facility to produce the content. What we've started to do is actually break that out and do the home run within its own isolated security zone. So we may have some storage back at base as well as storage out on the road, but what we don't do is cross the air gap back into the facility with anything other than, frankly, a deliverable. So those are some of the things, yeah, we have to put a lot more effort now into our security planning. And obviously, as the technology changes, that means that your security planning has to change almost every event.
Great. All right. I think we might have time for a quick question, if anyone has anything.
Questions? Everybody wants a taco. Oh, here we go. Oh, Tom.
So one time, I think Steve Jobs said something about if you can't combat them, right, you set, figure out a way to compete with them. So is that anywhere on anybody's mind, somewhere in the top management of what can we do better? Because obviously these guys, you know, everybody there going there for a reason.
So I don't know if it's combating, okay, but on our kids side, on Black Cartoon Network, to, I don't know if it's like prevent, you know, piracy after like broadcast or like things just like this, but we like now stream all of our shows before they air on the TV. So if you like really want to really watch it before like it airs, you can. You can like stack it too. So, you know, you can absolutely have the whole season of whichever show fully stacked before it airs with a like 2 month kind of delay.
And then basically, I think to add to that, you know, I think it behooves us all to consolidate platforms. You know, Fox today has like 3 or 4 different platforms where we disseminate information. If we can bring it all into one environment and then actually increase the value of what we actually offer using that platform, then I think we have a way to kind of, you know, swing away from some of these pirates who basically are only delivering the content. Can we add some value to the experience, which makes it pretty much a no-brainer to still want to use our over-the-top service rather than go and, you know, buy something from the mall?
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. And Guy, you want to come up and...
That's it. All right. Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you, panelists.